It's Friday, August 12th in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. Coming up, U.S. Olympic swimmers make more history in Rio. One of them is Michael Phelps, and we'll get reaction from a woman who's partnered with him to run a swimming school in his hometown of Baltimore, Maryland. It was also a gold medal performance for the U.S. stock market on Thursday. Our reporter in New York will tell us what sparked that rally. And we'll tell you why Western security analysts are so concerned about the potential for a new conflict between Russia and Ukraine. It's all ahead on International Edition. Well, it was a record day for U.S. swimmers at the Rio Olympics on Thursday night. Michael Phelps extended his gold medal haul by one to a whopping 22 career golds by winning the 200-meter individual medley race. He now has a total of 26 Olympic medals, more than anyone else has ever won. And his teammate Simone Manuel made history by becoming the first black female swimmer to win an individual gold in the pool, tying for first place in the 100-meter freestyle with Canada's Penny Oleksiak. Kathy Bennett is the director of the Michael Phelps Swimming School in Baltimore, where Phelps grew up. I spoke to her on the phone a short time ago, and I asked her how she felt watching the world's most successful Olympian do it again.
So it's a pretty amazing accomplishment. I guess there's a part of you that says, of course he's going to win when he gets up on the blocks, but then there's a part of you that says, how can he keep doing this? And delighting all of us. I mean, the statement, living the dream, I think, is really what he's doing right now.
And how do you think he is managing to do this?
He's got that extra piece to him that a lot of us don't have, getting beyond the pain or whatever he may be feeling or beyond what people think he can do. And in addition to that, he has had very, very many years of really hard training, and that hard training stays with you, even though he's had his in and out of the water things that we've all read about for the last, like leading into London and more dedicated this time. He has a base that is impenetrable right now. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going to go away. It will. And then I think that he said it over and over that this is really something that he wants to do. And 4 years ago, he just did it because he should do it, or everybody else thought he should do it, or whatever. I mean, he had choices then, too, but I guess his new level of maturity, when he decided to rededicate himself to training, he did it full force, and he's really grown up, and we're seeing more of Michael Phelps, the young man, and then Michael Phelps, the boy.
Right, so this is more, I guess, his initiative this time to come out in 2016. Well, I'd like to know how people are reacting at the Michael Phelps Swimming School to this achievement.
Right. Well, we are all very excited. At Meadowbrook, we've been decorating and having watch parties and sending out emails and, you know, keeping people up to date on our Facebook page. We've opened registration for swim lessons this fall. We always open it on August the 9th, which could not have been a more perfect day this year. And so we do have people signing up left and right. Michael learned, it's now called Michael Phelps Swim School, but it used to be called North Baltimore Swim School, and that's where he learned how to swim. So frankly, some parents said, oh, I don't need to be in a place where somebody as good as Michael Phelps learned how to swim, but we try to explain to them that we're trying to teach people to swim with a very foundations-based program so they understand the water, they're comfortable in the water, and then they can do with it what they want. And Michael just happens to be that person who is doing incredible things with his swimming, obviously. So we're pretty excited.
Well, Michael does have more events coming up, the 100-meter fly, the 4x100-meter relay, the 4x100 medley relay.
And medley. Yeah.
He has more chances for gold medals. What do you think we can expect to see from him in those next two races?
I'm thinking he's going to get gold in both of them. I mean, when you're on a roll like this, you know. Now, when you look at the fly, I mean, that's hard. All those hundreds are so hard and they're so compact. There's so little time between first and eighth. It can be, you know, a challenge. And so he's got that. I think maybe he's seated fourth or fifth tonight. I can't really remember. But, just by being able to get up there and do that 100 fly semifinal last night after about 30 minutes of rest after the 200 IM, a medal ceremony, a slight warm down was incredible. So he's got all day today to get fresh and comfortable again, and I feel like we might be seeing something special tonight too.
Well, I certainly...
He said last night he wanted a world record, so we'll see.
I'll be rooting for him as well. Another big achievement last night was American Simone Manuel tying for gold in the 100-meter freestyle. How did you feel seeing that?
Right. That was also amazing. You know, we were really cheering, and I don't know if you watched that race too, but she definitely came from behind. And listening to... I don't know her. I've just watched her at trials and now here, but it feels like she had the extra boost to make that extra little charge at the end, which, gave her the tie for first place, basically. So that was pretty amazing. And like I said, I don't know her, but I listened to her talk, and the fact that she medaled with the first African-American swimmer to do that, female swimmer, I guess, to do that, it just really must have been something, a goal that she had within herself, whether she spoke it or not, I don't know, but it definitely was something that you could, if you watch the race, you can see it.
Well,
I think
it did bring up an issue in the media today, where a lot of news organizations were highlighting the fact that African Americans suffered discrimination in swimming in America in the past. What do you feel about that history of the sport in America?
Well, I feel like there is a large part of the American population who do not know how to swim and do not have access to swimming pools, and that is something that we are trying our very best to do something about, and I guess that's what you mean. They don't have the opportunity to ever learn to swim, which then maybe obviously doesn't give them the opportunity to compete and use their swimming in college or however they want to go with it. And that is a huge problem. Through Michael's foundation, the Michael Phelps Foundation, we actually work with Boys and Girls Clubs of America. And by the end of October, we will have at least one Boys and Girls Club in every state where they have been trained to teach the way we teach and through the method of Michael Phelps swimming, as well as goal setting and healthy eating. And that it's usually a city population, that will probably, it's certainly not... I don't know what the statistics are, but there is a heavy portion of that would be African-American students who are learning to swim. And they could be, because of the Boys and Girls Club, they'll be at least 8 years old. But for many of us, our children are in this pool at 3 years old and 4 years old. So they are sort of at a disadvantage, and we've had a lot of fun over the last 8 years working with Boys and Girls Clubs. And so I believe that it is true, just perhaps, you know, a pool is an expensive thing to put in. It's got a lot of risks that go with it. Not everybody wants to own a pool. Not all schools have pools, which I would love to see that happen, that it became part of everybody's curriculum and everyone was given the opportunity to learn to swim who went to school.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to Kathy Bennett, director of the Michael Phelps Swimming School in Baltimore, and also someone who did teach Michael Phelps herself when he was very young. Thank you so much.
Okie doke. Thank you.
Okay, let's check on social media now with VOA's Andrew Polchevsky, who joins me in the studio. Hey, Andrew. So we're going to talk some more about swimming.
Yeah, there's lots to talk about.
All right, let's do that.
You know, it was a good night if your name was Simone, and starting with Simone Manuel.
That's right.
As you were talking about the first black woman to win an individual swimming event gold for the U.S. and just her excitement you could see on her face. That was something that social media really highlighted and said, this is what the Olympics is all about. Realizing your dreams and having that moment where you realize I've done it.
And so, she was emotional when she accepted that medal, wasn't she?
She was. Absolutely. You see the tears streaming down her face. That was another great moment. And she's getting high praise from her roommate. Her roommate just happens to be Katie Ledecky, who has had quite an Olympics for herself.
Gold medalist.
Another gold medalist for the U.S. I think it's their roommates in the Olympic Village, because she says, my roomie, Simone Manuel, just won a gold medal. I'm shaking, so proud of you. #champ, tweeting that out just
after. That was nice. I saw that tweet, too.
Yeah, so that was a nice moment. And again, it gives us that sense of the athletes, not just as these kind of robots that go and compete and swim and whatever. They're people. They have friendships and those kind of things. So Simone Manuel had a great night. Simone Biles had a great night. of course, winning the gold in the women's all-around in gymnastics. And her big quote that everybody was talking about and sharing was, she said, "I'm not the next Usain Bolt or Michael Phelps. I'm the first Simone Biles." So a lot of people sharing that saying. She's an original. She's saying, right, "I've staked my claim. I've won now two gold medals Olympics and potentially more in the individual events."
And so we're actually going to hear a little bit from her later, just to plug a report from Park Brewer later in the show.
He'll go into detail on that exciting night last night in Rio.
Right.
And then jumping back to Michael Phelps, since we were talking with Kathy Bennett, he's, you know, had quite an Olympics for himself after 4 years ago saying, "Oh, I think I'm going to retire," and then saying, "No, I'm going to come back." And he's gone and won 4 gold medals already at the Rio Games. He'd put out on Instagram a post that had just a photo of him kind of biting the gold medal or kissing the gold medal, and it said that he was, you know, so excited. It's, you know, words can't describe. He said he's speechless, and he puts hashtag 22 and hashtag 26. Of course, 22 gold medals that he's won in his career,
right,
26 medals overall.
He's not shy about telling the world, you know.
No, not at all. And the world, in turn, is not shy about showing their appreciation for him, because he posted this, and within a half hour, it already had over 100,000 likes on Instagram. So he's getting a lot of love from around the world, in the U.S. and all over the place, as the greatest Olympian of all time. So kudos to him for that,
right,
having quite an Olympics. Interestingly, too, one thing I saw on social media, a congressman from the state of Maryland, which is just adjacent to D.C., put up a post talking about Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky. They're both from the state of Maryland. So he said,
Bethesda. That's where she's from.
He said, with our state's Olympians, we could take on the world. So
Maryland has something in the water.
Something in the water. It's literally, something in the water.
And I should just add that we both spoke to Kathy Bennett for our hashtag VOA show.
Good to hear from her again, and she's got a lot to be proud of.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL, and I'm on Twitter at Michael_Lippin, and the show is there too at VOA_IE. Well, here are some of the top stories right now on voanews.com. Russian President Vladimir Putin gets new chief of staff. British teen girl who went to Islamic State-controlled area of Syria is reported killed. Belgium detains 3 people in anti-terrorism case after Brussels raids. A blast at a Chinese power plant kills at least 21 people. And Thailand bomb attacks shake its tourism industry. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, all 3 major U.S. stock indexes won gold medals of their own on Thursday, with the Dow Industrials, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ closing at record highs. Jill Malandrino is following the markets for us at our New York studios. Those 3 U.S. indexes were trading slightly lower by midday on Friday, but I wanted to know how impressed she was with the way they finished the day on Thursday.
Right, well, the 3 major averages in the U.S. did party like it was 1999. The S&P 500, NASDAQ, and Dow Jones Industrial Average all closed at all-time highs together for the first time, and this is since December 31st, 1999. That's really impressive action considering how much we have moved from the February 11th lows when the S&P 500 was down 14%. The big part of the move has come after the Brexit vote, which for a couple days after that, we saw a pretty big downturn in the markets. And since then, it's been a pretty impressive move to the upside. A couple caveats here, though, however, volatility is at record lows, and we're also seeing very low volume in the market. So it's hard to say if there's a lot of conviction in this market or if it's just a function of not many people being there to participate in the market during August slowdown.
I like that Prince reference, by the way. So what were the standout sectors in Thursday's rally?
What's interesting is we're seeing consumer discretionary sector improve as we're seeing economic data improve with retail sales. What we're seeing right now as well is the tech sector outperforming. So when you see tech and consumer discretionary outperforming together, that suggests that it's more of a cyclical market, where sectors that were out of favor over the past couple of quarters last year are now making a rebound. And a lot of that has to do with some strength building up in the consumer area.
What are the general expectations in the markets for second quarter earnings?
I think we're going to continue to see a mixed bag with earnings, and we're also going to see a mixed bag with economic data. We're not getting consistency yet with the employment and consumer reports. You have to remember, too, with earnings, even though they're beating, expectations have been lowered significantly, and we're not seeing an improvement in the bottom line, which is sales and revenue. So while companies are beating on revenue estimates, they're still down year over year. So we need to start to see more consistency on the bottom line improving, and then I think you'll start to see some more participation back into the market. We also have the general election in November as well, and that's really going to be the last variable heading into the end of the year.
Okay, well, thank you very much to our financial markets reporter, Jill Malandrino in New York.
All right, thank you.
Well, Russian news reports say Moscow has deployed an advanced S-400 surface-to-air missile battery to the Crimean Peninsula that it annexed 2 years ago from Ukraine. The deployment of the Russian missile system had been planned since July, but its arrival in Crimea coincides with a surge of military activity and angry verbal exchanges between Ukraine and Russia. Those exchanges include claims from the Kremlin that two Russians were killed by Ukrainian intelligence forces on the Crimean-Ukrainian border last week, a claim that Kyiv has ridiculed. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has more on what led up to all of this tension.
2 years ago, this was Ukraine's Independence Square. Riot police firing on protesters in Maidan. More than 50 killed at close range. The result was the ouster of Ukraine's Russian leading president, Viktor Yanukovych, and Russia's subsequent annexation of Crimea. Now the Ukrainian military is on high alert, fearful of another conflict with Russia. Moscow shut off three crossings at the Crimea-Ukraine border last week. Kyiv accuses Russia of massive troop buildups in the Donbas region and along the border shared by the two countries. Philip Carber of the Potomac Foundation says the moves have clear invasion potential.
They're reorganizing the 20th Army that'll control those, and then they've created this new First Guards Tank Army. So since the end of the Cold War, the Russians haven't had any tank army. Well, they're back.
But Russia accuses Ukraine of provocations by planning raids in Crimea. Moscow released video of a suspected saboteur accused of planning to bomb infrastructure in Crimea. President Vladimir Putin says it's a terror tactic.
This attempt to provoke an outbreak of violence, to provoke a conflict, is nothing other than a desire to divert public attention from the country by those who took power in Kyiv, to continue to stay in power, and to continue stealing from their own people.
Residents in Zhankoy, a Crimean city near the de facto border with Ukraine, report all is calm now.
I have seen police patrols in a couple of places near the market. Nothing special. Actually, everything is as usual.
Observers say both sides seem to be preparing for something bigger. Experts say the West needs to provide a united front to help diffuse the tension. One goes so far as to say Western politicians should at least start paying attention. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study from three retired U.S. Air Force officers and the University of Colorado Boulder suggests geoscientists may have helped avert a U.S. nuclear strike on May 23, 1967. On that day, radar and radio communications were interrupted at three U.S. ballistic missile early warning system sites. Thinking their equipment was being jammed by the former Soviet Union, the U.S. Air Force started to prepare for nuclear war. At that time, any purposeful interruption of U.S. military radar capabilities was considered an act of war. Fortunately, Air Force commanders checked with their space weather forecasters, who told them that there were serious geomagnetic storms underway, which could be the cause of the radar and radio problems. The study suggests this information was passed up through the chain of command just in time to stop any U.S. military action, including the use of nuclear weapons. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. Well, as we were saying earlier in the show, two-time world champion gymnast Simone Biles of the United States won the women's all-round Olympics gold medal Thursday evening at the Rio Olympic Arena. VOA's Park Brewer was there and filed this report.
Simone Biles showed why she was the heavy favorite, putting on a spectacular floor exercise that closed the competition, as well as scoring the most points of anyone in any of the four routines. The 19-year-old Biles was overcome with emotion when she learned she was Olympic champion.
Everything hit me at once, and I realized I had finally done it. And I've been dreaming of it for a couple years now, and it's unreal how it happened. So I was just so excited.
Biles' combined score for the uneven bars, vault, balance beam, and floor was 2.1 points ahead of teammate and one of her best friends, Ali Raisman, who got the silver medal. Alia Mustafina of Russia won the bronze. When Biles completed her routine, she gave Raisman a big hug.
I think that we're just so close, so if you were to ask me, I feel like Ali as well as me, we had both won gold in that moment.
Raisman then shared her thoughts.
The whole time we've been here together, that's been our goal to go 1-2. It's just really cool that we were both able to do it. And the whole entire day, we were just, you know, hugging each other and telling each other that we love each other just to, you know, no matter what, at the end of the day, we're basically like sisters and we'll always have this moment forever.
And both Americans will get to try for more medals when the individual apparatus competition is held here next week. Park Brewer, VOA News at the Rio Olympics.
Well, you can check the latest medal count of the Olympics on our website, voanews.com. And that's a wrap for International Edition. You can find us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Your director today was Steve Karish, and the engineer was Tony Pollock. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. You can find me on Twitter, too. My handle is @Michael_Lippin. Hope you have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the mention of violent extremism, groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIL and regions like the Middle East usually come to mind. But according to Sarah Sewell, Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights, violent extremism is on the rise in Africa, in East Africa, West Africa, the Sahel, and the Maghreb. The terrorists often try to justify their depravity with religion.
Many violent extremists harness religious claims to cloak their depravity and to inspire and recruit followers. And sadly, acts of violence in the name of religion are as old as religion itself, and they persist in communities around the world, from so-called honor killings to wife burnings.
Lately, we are seeing a new, highly dangerous trend, said Undersecretary Sewell, the rise of organized, heavily armed, non-state actors that justify violence and territorial ambitions with religious ideologies. Groups including Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, and the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army, threaten Africa's every achievement and aspiration. For Africa's future and for global security, they must be defeated, said Undersecretary Sewell. Across the African continent, the United States trains and equips foreign militaries, shares intelligence, and supports police to improve border security. These are well-known elements of our counterterrorism approach in Africa. But we must also attend to the other part of the equation, preventing the next generation of threat from emerging. We do this through our Countering Violent Extremism effort, or CVE. CVE stresses the importance of good governance and the engagement of civil society, particularly community and religious leaders, as well as strengthening ties between governments and the communities they serve. In the last 2 years, the U.S. government has helped lead a shift toward this more localized and preventative approach to violent extremism in Africa and around the world. At the global level, we are helping governments, international NGOs, and multilateral bodies establish counter-messaging centers, develop CVE strategies, engage civil society, and share best practices. The U.S. government has also helped establish networks of researchers, young people, and municipal leaders to support each other in the shared struggle against violent extremism. The damage wrought by violent extremists measures not only in the blood they spill, but the investments they deter, the textbooks they burn, the women and girls they enslave, the vast human potential they squander, said Undersecretary Sewell. This is a struggle for the future of countless communities across Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.